Pop dredged his keyring up from his pocket, unlocked the special drawer, and took out the camera, once again being careful to hold it by the strap only. He looked with some hope at the front of the Polaroid, thinking he might see that the lens had been smashed in its latest tumble, hoping that the goddamn thing's eye had been poked out, you might say. But his father had been fond of saying that the devil's luck is always in, and that seemed to be the case with Kevin Delavan's goddamn camera. The chipped place on the thing's side had chipped away a little more, but that was all. He closed the drawer, and as he turned the key, saw the one picture he'd taken in his sleep, lying face down on the floor. As unable not to look at it as Lot's wife had been unable not to turn her back and look at the destruction of Sodom, he picked it up with those blunt fingers that hid their dexterity from the world so well, and turned it over. The dog creature had begun its spring. Its forepaws had barely left the ground, but along its misshapen backbone, and in the bunches of muscle under the hide, with its hair like the stiff filaments sticking out of black steel brushes, he could see all that kinetic energy beginning to release itself. Its face and head were actually a little blurred in this photograph, as its mouth yawned wider and dripping up from the picture, like a sound heard under glass. He seemed to hear a low and throaty snarl beginning to rise toward a roar. The shadow photographer looked as if he were trying to stumble back another pace, but what did it matter? That was smoke jetting from the holes in the dog thing's muzzle, all right. Smoke, and more smoke drifting back from the hinges of its open jaws in the little space where the crogged and ugly steak wall of its teeth ended. And any man would stumble back from a horror like that. Any man would try to turn and run. But all Pop had to do was look to tell you that the man, of course it was a man. Maybe once it had been a boy, a teenage boy, but who had the camera now? Who had taken that picture in mere startled reflex, with a kind of wince of the finger? That man didn't have a nickel's worth of chances. That man could keep his feet or trip over them, and all the difference it would make would be as to how he died, while he was on his feet or while he was on his ass. Pop crumpled the picture between his fingers, then stuck his key ring back in his pocket. He turned, holding what had been Kevin Delavan's Polaroid Sun 660, and was now his Polaroid Sun 660, by the strap, and started toward the back of the store. He would pause on the way, just long enough to get the sledge, and as he neared the door to the back shed, a shutter flash, huge and white and soundless, went off not in front of his eyes, but behind them, in his brain. He turned back, and now his eyes were as empty as the eyes of a man who has been temporarily blinded by some bright light. He walked past the work table with the camera now held in his hands at chest level, as one might carry a votive urn or some other sort of religious offering or relic. Halfway between the work table and the front of the store was a bureau covered with clocks. To its left was one of the barn-like structure's support beams, and from a hook planted in this there hung another clock, an imitation German cuckoo clock. Pop grasped it by the roof and pulled it off its hook, indifferent to the counterweights, which immediately became entangled in one another's chains, and to the pendulum, which snapped off when one of the disturbed chains tried to twine around it. The little door below the roof peak of the clock sprang ajar. The wooden bird poked out its beak and one startled eye. It gave a single choked sound, "Kook!" as if in protest of this rough treatment before creeping back inside again. Pop hung the Sun by its strap on the hook where the clock had been, then turned and moved toward the back of the store for the second time, his eyes still blank and dazzled. He clutched the clock by its roof, swinging it back and forth indifferently, not hearing the cluds and clunks from inside it, or the occasional strangled sound that might have been the bird trying to escape, not noticing when one of the counterweights smacked the end of an old bed, snapped off, and went rolling beneath, leaving a deep trail in the undisturbed dust of years. He moved with the blank, mindless purpose of a robot. In the shed, he paused just long enough to pick up the sledgehammer by its smooth shaft. With both hands thus filled, he had to use the elbow of his left arm to knock the hook out of the eye bolt so he could push open the shed door and walk into the backyard. He crossed to the chopping block and set the imitation German cuckoo clock on it. He stood for a moment with his head inclined down toward it, both of his hands now on the handle of the sledge, His face remained blank, his eyes dim and dazzled. But there was a part of his mind which not only thought clearly, but thought all of him was thinking and acting clearly. This part of his mind really believed he had come downstairs, gotten a Polaroid from the drawer, and proceeded directly out back, pausing only to get the sledge. And it was this part that would do his remembering later, unless it became convenient for him to remember some other truth, or any other truth for that matter. Pop Merrill raised the sledgehammer over his right shoulder and brought it down hard. Not as hard as Kevin had done, but hard enough to do the job. It struck squarely on the roof of the imitation German cuckoo clock. The clock did not so much break or shatter as splatter. Pieces of plastic wood and little gears and springs flew everywhere. And what that little piece of Pop which saw would remember, unless, of course, it became convenient to remember otherwise, were pieces of camera splattering everywhere. He pulled the sledge off the block and stood for a moment with his meditating, unseeing eyes on the shambles. The bird, which to Pop looked exactly like a film case, a Polaroid Sun film case, was lying on its back with its little wooden feet sticking straight up in the air, looking both deader than any bird outside of a cartoon ever looked, and yet, somehow, miraculously unhurt at the same time. He had his look, then turned and headed toward the shed door. "There," he muttered under his breath. "Good enough." Someone standing, even very close to him, might have been unable to pick up the words themselves, but it would have been hard to miss the unmistakable tone of relief with which they were spoken. "That's done. Don't have to worry about that anymore. Now what's next? Pipe tobacco, isn't it?" But when he got to the drugstore on the other side of the block 15 minutes later, it was not pipe tobacco he asked for, although that was what he would remember asking for. He asked for film. Polaroid film.